that's one of those where I needed Brother Gale to keep going. He had my attention, and many of you, a few of you are here that were here on a Wednesday night several weeks ago now, and I just talked briefly about the doctrine of election, and I just want to point that out, and because Brother Gale hit me again and got me stirred up about it. Back in the book of Genesis, early on, Genesis, Adam and Eve, they're covered in the first 1, 2, 3 chapters. In chapter 4, we talk about two brothers, Cain and Abel. Y'all are familiar with this story generally, Cain and Abel. Adam knew his wife, and she had Cain, conceived Cain. And then again, she bare his brother Abel, and Abel was a keeper of sheep, but Cain was a tiller of the ground. Abel was kept sheep. Cain was a farmer. And in process of time, and I mentioned there's a long way between verse 2 and verse 3. They're just being born, and now verse 3, they're getting ready to make sacrifices to the Lord. Process time, Cain brought of the fruit of the ground an offering to the Lord, and Abel also brought the first thing of his flock and the fat thereof. They both brought an offering to the Lord. Now look, and the Lord had respect unto Abel and his offering, but unto Cain and his offering he had not respect. Now, look, it doesn't, you know, it says, well, the offerings weren't good. Look again. And the Lord had respect unto Abel and his offering, and unto Cain and his offering he had not respect. What did Cain do wrong? We're not told. We're always given everything we need, really need to know. But Abel was elect. Abel was one of the Lord's children. The Lord chose him. And I'm going, well, that's not fair. Is it, Brother Gale? It's not fair. Thank goodness it's not fair. I wouldn't be there. I'd never make it there. You know, and how do we know? We go over here to Hebrews. I had to quickly mark my Bible so I could go there quickly. Hebrews chapter 11. Chapter 11, verse 4. By faith, Abel offered unto God a more excellent sacrifice. So he offered an excellent sacrifice. Is that it? Sacrifice than Cain, by which he obtained witness that he was righteous. Abel was righteous. He gave witness to that by offering a better sacrifice. You know, well, couldn't Cain have done that? Well, go with me over here to 1 John chapter 3, verse 11 and 12. For this is the message that you have heard from the beginning, that we should love one another, not as Cain, who was of that wicked one. Abel was a child of God. Cain wasn't. That decision was made, as Brother Gale said, before the foundation of the world, under the doctrine of election. I appreciate that, Brother Gale. I want to point out, doctrine of election didn't just start in Romans over in the new chapter. It started with the first two brothers. The doctrine of election began right there. And again, it's based on, as I love Brother Gale says, it's based on mercy. It's not based on justice. If it's based on justice, none of us are going to go read the third chapter of Romans. None of us will be there if any of it's ever based on justice. I appreciate that, Brother Gale. It was good. You got me going and stirred up a little bit. I wanted to talk to you a little bit this morning on a little bit different subject about the Bible and is it right in contemporary times? You know, the Bible, this Bible we have now, it's nearly, at the last writing of it's nearly 2,000 years old. And it goes back even a couple thousand years before that, back, and I don't know the date, but at least a couple thousand years. It's 4,000 years old, all the writings in it. Is it contemporary for us? I mean, we're modern. We got smartphones, and we've got computers, and we got cars that are about to start driving themselves, you know. And we got the things of the world, and, you know, the things going on in Washington, D.C., and around the world. You know, there's different times today than there was back then. They didn't have to worry about nuclear war back then. They didn't have to worry about all the things that are going on in today's world. Is this Bible still relevant today? And y'all know me. I'm a student of politics. I love government. I'm a student of politics. And I want to address for a little bit here, to a period of time, a subject with you about look at what's going on back then and see if we can apply it today. I'm in Matthew chapter 22. Back in Matthew chapter 21. Matthew chapter 21 begins, roll back up a little bit, with Jesus' triumphal entry into Jerusalem. I won't go there, but if you go over in John chapter 12, you'll see that that was done on the fifth day before the Passover. Fifth day before the Passover, he made his triumphal entry, and John tells you, and that's when they laid down the palm branches and all that kind of thing. They laid all those down, and they call that Palm Sunday, which is coming up here in another few weeks. I don't believe that happened on Sunday. I believe that happened on Friday. But nonetheless, I believe it, if it's going to call, it should have been Palm Friday instead of Palm Sunday, because it was a few days before, it was 5 days before the Passover. That's when they called, and that's the Sabbath that was talking about in the Bible. But anyway, that's what's taking place. And then Christ gives them several parables. He establishes authority. He challenges the Pharisees and the Sadducees, and he gives them several parables, including the wicked husbandman, where the Lord said, I set up a vineyard here, and the people taking care of it, you know, didn't give me the first fruits like they were supposed to, didn't give them to me. Then he goes into chapter 22, and I'm sorry, I missed a spot. Back in chapter 21, it says he left and went out into the city of Bethany and came back the next day. So it was the fifth day before Passover. Now it's the fourth day before Passover. Now, why is that important? Now, I'm going to start with Matthew chapter 22, verse 15. Okay, when he's doing this is the fourth day before Passover. What's important about the fourth day before Passover? If you go back to Exodus chapter 12, where the Lord put in place the Passover service, he said, today is the beginning of a new month. It's a new moon, beginning of a new month, and a new year. And the 15th day, 14th and 15th day, will be the Passover. It'll be 14 days from now. And he told them how to, you know, you're going to put blood above your doorpost, and I'll pass over your house and take the firstborn of everybody, of man and beast thereafter. He says, that's on the 14th day. And then he says, but on the 10th day, I want you to find a lamb. Find a lamb without blemish. Examine it without blemish. Do you be used for the sacrifice? What's the 10th day to 14th? It's 4 days. We're now 4 days before Passover. This is taking place 4 days before Passover. And the Sadducees and the Pharisees are fixing to ask a series of questions to the Lord. They're going to examine the lamb to make sure he is without blemish. Christ followed the law to a jot and a tittle. 4 days before Passover, we are examining the lamb, and that's what's taking place in Matthew. It's also over in Mark and Luke, but a better version of it that I like is here in Matthew. And we have three people that are examining. We have the Pharisees, we have the Sadducees, and we have the Herodians. And that's what I want to talk to you about. You know, it's one of those deals about, you know, you go to a football game, you can't see watch the game without a program. You don't know who the players are. If you go to a play, as Brother Gail was talking about, they give you a little program so you know who's playing what. You don't understand this. These questions are going to place here, and I'm not going to go through all the questions. I want to spend a little time right up front. Who are the people asking him these questions? Because I've got a point I want to make in that regard. Pharisees, the Sadducees, and the Herodians. That's covered beginning 15 and 16 of Matthew chapter 22. You know, most of you know the Sadducees and the Pharisees were the Jews. They were members of the Jewish, different sects of the Jews. The Herodians were Jews also. Let me talk about them in a minute, but they were not necessarily religious. But we have the Sadducees and the Pharisees. Those were Jewish sects. The other one that you don't read about in the Bible are the Essenes. Essenes are the ones that went off in the mountains and hid from public. You know, you've heard of the Dead Sea Scrolls. That's who it was believed. That's the Jewish sect that apparently, maybe I've left those in caves. But we talk here, the Pharisees and the Sadducees. These guys were the active ones. These were involved. The Sadducees, they both had the same scriptures. They had the Old Testament. They both had the exact same scriptures, but they read them differently. They saw a big difference in them. Sadducees didn't believe in the resurrection. They didn't believe in the resurrection. They didn't believe in angels. They didn't believe in spiritual things. They believed in the first five books of the Bible. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. That's the law of Moses. And if the Lord gave it to Moses in writing and Moses wrote it down, that's the law, and we're not going to look at anything else. And you cannot prove, and that's what they told the Pharisees, you cannot prove the resurrection to us in the first five books of the Bible. There is no, they said, there's nothing in there about the resurrection, and you can't prove it to us. If it's not written down, law of Moses written down, then we don't believe it. And the Pharisees says, no, you know, first of all, let me say, the Sadducees also, they were kind of the aristocrats. They were kind of the higher level of the Jews. They really respected those that are a little more wealthy. And because they were more wealthy, they also got along with the king a little bit better. They got along with Rome a little bit better. And as a result of that, it was always Rome that named the high priest. Remember, Herod built this latest temple, version of the temple. And as a result, Caesar, Herod, and them, they got to name who the high priest was. And it was always the Sadducees. You can read that over in Acts, 5th chapter of Acts, about how the Sadducees always had the high priest. So they always got the high priest because they kind of catered in with the Roman government. They were the sophisticates, and that, but they didn't believe in the resurrection unless you could prove it to me, and Moses and the Pharisees never could do that. And on the other hand, the Pharisees, they said, no, it's not just the five books of Bible. It's also what the Lord told Moses that he didn't write it down, but it's been handed down, and we've added to that. It's by tradition we do a lot more things. There's 613 laws in the law of Moses, but we've got more other unwritten laws that's been handed down from parent to child, from priest to a younger priest, down through the generations. They had all these other written laws, and they said, you know, we have to interpret this Bible, have to apply that interpretation. And they did believe in the resurrection because they believed all of the scriptures, all at that time only the Old Testament, but they believed them all. And that was a big difference between them. Now, the Herodians are going to talk about here a bit. They were Jewish people, but the Herodians were the guys that liked government. I'm probably a little bit in that category. I enjoy government, and I've contributed to candidates, you know. But the Herodians are those Jewish people who liked Herod. Herod built him the temple. Herod was said he was being good to the Jews. He wasn't. He just wanted to be king of something, have his name praised all the time. But the Herodians were those Jewish people who favored the government of Herod. They favored the government of Caesar, and they wanted to be close to those politicians that come from Rome and the big wigs from Rome. They wanted to be close to them. That was Herod. They weren't really religious. They were Jews, but they were not really religious. Now, I want to talk to you about the personalities of these three groups here for just a minute. You know, we have our interpretation of our documents in this country. We have the Constitution. You know, and it isn't amazing we have got a single document that's really pretty clear. Isn't it amazing the different interpretations we have of that? Let's take for a second the Republicans. The Republicans are politicians, and they'll many times change and blend because they got to do what they need to get elected. But the person who was probably most demonstrative of the Republican philosophy was Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. He was a purist when it came to the Republican philosophy. We have a Constitution here. It's a document. It's a contract. And you don't read anything outside that contract. If it's on the face of it, we follow it, period. We're not going to expand on it. We're not going to get into this deal of expanding law at all. If it's in there, it's okay. If it's not in there, then it's not the law. Who does that sound like? Sounds like Sadducees. If it's in the book of the book of law, in the first five books, okay. If it's not, if God didn't give it to Moses and write it down, then it's not law and we're not going to follow it. That sounds like the Republican philosophy today. You know, the Sadducees kind of like to associate with the upper society, the aristocrats, those that were wealthy. The Pharisees and the Sadducees ran the temple because they had the high priest. The Pharisees didn't. The Pharisees ran all the synagogues around. They were closer to the lower levels of people, and many people. And they believed that, no, this document is expanded. We've got to expand on it, and we've got to follow those expansions, those interpretations. What do the Democrats do with the same Constitution that we talked about the Republicans? Again, they're politicians, and they're going to do what they need to do personally to get elected. But the most purist was Supreme Court Justice William O. Douglas, very much a liberal, appointed, I believe, by Roosevelt. But he lasted up until 60s and 70s, and he used to write about what the Constitution is. It's not a contract. It's a living document. It moves along with society. We interpret it according to what our needs of society are. And so you have to expand on that. And that's why he believes in the justice is expanded. A Democrat purist and a Republican purist reading the exact same document and seeing it totally different. Good example of this is doctrine of privacy. Scalia said, there is no right of privacy in the Constitution. If you want it in there, then pass an amendment and put it in, but there's no right of privacy in the Constitution. William O. Douglas says, yeah, there is. There's a right of privacy. If I've got a right of freedom of speech, then I've got a right not to speak. I've got a right to keep my private things private. And I'm going, okay, I like that. And then you get over here to the subject of abortion. The courts have found that's under the doctrine of the right of privacy. Privacy is not mentioned in the Constitution. So the Republicans say you can't have anything under right of privacy unless you put it in there. So they're a hard believer in a hardcore law. If it's not written down, it's got to be in there. Democrats are the exact opposite way. They said, no, it's an expanded document. It's a breathing, living document, and you change it as you go along. It's Sounds a lot like the Pharisees, doesn't it? We have the exact same document in the Constitution. You sue it totally different ways and believe it totally different ways. Sadducees are interpreting the law a lot like the Republicans interpret the Constitution. Democrats interpret the Constitution kind of, and it sounds like the Pharisees, closer to the lower level people, not the aristocrats, and they believe in expanding on that document. Now, you've got, in both cases, you've got people who see the same Bible, same doctrine, same piece of paper, two totally different ways. It's easy to get upset at today's politics, isn't it? Why can't they get along? Why can't they do something right? Why can't they ever agree on anything? If you want to understand the Democrats and the Republicans, go back and understand the Sadducees and the Pharisees. Everything about our life today can be gleaned right out of this book. The nature of man has not changed. We look at documents and we'd see it differently. Because why? Because the devil still uses the same tools he's always used. Lust, as we told her in 2 John, lust of the eyes, lust of the flesh, and the pride of life. Our pride, our lust, our desires, our lust for power and greed. Those are what the devil uses the same way today as he did back with the Sadducees and the Pharisees. The Herodians that are in here, the Herodians are people that love government. They're people that, we got people today that are just like this. They go out and they'll support both parties. I'll support whoever I need to be close to the leaders. It's the people that give huge sums of money to all the leaders. They don't care less about the religion. They want to be close to the leadership. You know, in many cases, it's the lobbyists. In many cases, those that contribute to power, those in power. These three people that are mentioned here are still operating today. Now, don't go out and tell everybody that Brother Don said Sadducees were Republicans and Pharisees were Democrats. That's not what I'm saying. I want you to see that the nature of man has not changed. Don't let yourself get upset at all this. Understand it. And understand what's going on. The same thing is going on today that took place 2,000 years ago in this book. And this book lays it out, and when you see it, you're going, wow. Everything in our life, everything in your life is addressed in this book. Read here real quickly now. The Pharisees took counsel as how they might entangle Jesus in his talk. They're going to try to trick him here. And they sent unto him their disciples with the Herodians. The Pharisees said, let's get with the Herodians. Now, if you read through this book, the Pharisees hated the Herodians. The Pharisees are the ones that had the zealots among them. We believe in a hardcore Jewish rule, and we hate it that the Roman government is in here presiding over us and ruling with us. And the Herodians, wait a minute, these guys are not so bad. They're government leaders, and they went over and tried to work with them. I often believe Matthew, the tax collector, was probably a Herodian. He was Jewish, but he went to work for the Roman government collecting taxes for them. When Jesus found him, he was collecting taxes for the government and did that work. Now, how Matthew and Simon the Zealot got along, both as disciples of Christ, they couldn't have got along anywhere else other than Christ brought them together and they worked for his purposes. But you have here the Pharisees and the Herodians getting together. Now, we've got a saying here that politics makes strange bedfellows. You remember when Lubbock voted in liquor by the drink several years ago? Who opposed that? Well, all the churches in town, you know, lined up and opposed that. They ran a lot of ads. Anybody look to see where they got their money? The liquor store dealers out on the strip were funding most of that. They were funding most of the churches to oppose liquor by the drink in Lubbock. That sounds a lot like the Pharisees and the Herodians getting together. We both have a common enemy. Strip didn't want to give up all their profit to all the people in town restaurants who could then be selling beer and alcohol. They funded that. And they funded for most of the religious leaders here in town who came out that and used ads and came against it. They were funded by the very thing they opposed. Now, we have here, like, you know, there's a good example right here. The Pharisees combined with Herodians. And the Herodians went to him and said, Master, we know thou art true and teach us the way of God in truth. And they're trying to flatter him and set him up here to ask him a killer question. Neither carest thou of any man, thou regardest not the person of man. Tell us therefore, what thinkest thou, is it lawful to give tribute to Caesar or not? Now, I preached on this several years ago, and I'm not going to go in great detail. But the Herodians and the Pharisees are on opposite sides of this question. The Herodian says, is it lawful to give tribute? Is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar? Now, he's got the Herodians and the Pharisees. If Jesus says, yes, it's okay to pay taxes to Caesar, he's made the Pharisees mad and all their followers, and they're going to use it against him because we don't want to give money to Caesar. We're supposed to oppose him, especially the zealot part of the Pharisees. They'd be mad at him. What do you mean we pay taxes to Caesar, give money to Caesar? So if he doesn't answer it yes, what if he answers it no, you don't give it to him? Then that makes all the Pharisees mad, but the Herodians are mad because they're big supporters of the government. And they're going to go run and tell Herod and Caesar about he's telling everybody not to pay their taxes to you. Now, they're kind of doing a cross-examination of him here. Well, one you don't want to cross-examine is Jesus. He knew what was going on, and you can see here, but Jesus perceived their wickedness and said, why tempt me, you hypocrites? Show me the money. Have you heard that before? Show me the tribute money. And they brought him a penny, and he said, there's Caesar's image on that. And he says, now, render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and render unto God the things that are God's. That's 2,000 years ago. Does that apply today? You know, and I think when I preached on this, I believe I actually asked Brother Gale. Brother Gale, does the taxes for a lot of people, does everybody render their taxes properly? Do I take any deductions I shouldn't take? Do I forget to give some cash money down as income? Am I rendering everything to Caesar that like Jesus tells me to do? It gets a little personal, gets a little touchy, doesn't it, when we start talking about it. Are we taking too many deductions or not reporting our income? But the next question is worse. And render under God the things that are God's. Do we render under God the things that are God's? There's a lot in here about separation of church and state, but Jesus says, here's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to support the government, and it doesn't have to be involved in that government, but you keep it separate from those things to God, but you render under God's those things that are His. That applies to us today. I mean, what's taking place here in the world today, in our government today, is taking place right here 2,000 years ago. That's the biggest point I want to make. This Bible is as relevant today as it's ever been. And if you want to understand what's going on in this world, read your Bible. It's already there. You know, the Lord has already given us every answer to every problem in our life. You know, we can get off on sickness and all those things we talk about and pray about. But He's given us here what's going on in our government today. You read that and you're going, okay, I understand. The devil's using the Sadducees and the Pharisees. He's using the Republicans and the Democrats, the same way we always have. They're not even being true to their own cause most of the time because they're politicians. And that's with it. We've got strange bedfellows here just like we do in the world today. That's the work of Satan in our lives. We need to recognize it. We need to recognize when Satan is having his influence, the lust of the eyes, the lust of the flesh, and the pride of life. The same three temptations he gave to Adam and Eve, the same temptations he tried to tempt Christ with in the wilderness. Each one of those. And he still uses them. He didn't have to change his ploys. He's still using the same temptations today. And we need to recognize it. We know that. I need to see it. I look at myself and see what my weakness is, because that's where Satan's going to hit me. That's where Satan's going to come at me. I made the joke many before about Satan knows not to use broccoli on me. Not asparagus. I said that wrong. Not to use asparagus on me, because it's not going to work. You know. Now, there's some other things that are going to work with me. You know, I love football. I love my Texas Tech football. Sometimes I'll go to a game late at night, and I shouldn't. And sometimes I've learned to skip some of those because I want to be ready and prepared to go to church the next day. So we need to recognize your own weaknesses, because that's where Satan's going to hit, and he's going to hit you. You know, the lust of the flesh. There's all things and sorts of things involved in that, from drinking and gambling and sex and eating and everything else. The lust of the eyes, I say the power and the greed, all of those are part of the lust of the eyes. And the pride of life, my pride and my ego. You know, I do some stupid things because I don't want to be proven wrong. I'm not going to say I was wrong when I ought to be apologizing to people for the mistakes I've made. Satan is using the same tools today, and I just wanted to point that out here real quickly. I've got another minute here left. He talks about that, and in the Sadducees, and I love this one. The Sadducees then, after he'd put down the Pharisees and the Herodians, Sadducees come and said there is no resurrection. And they gave him this stupid hypothetical about, it's out of the law of Moses. Moses says if a woman marries a man and the man dies, then the next brother is supposed to step forward and take the place of the one that died. And they go through this, and there's seven brothers, and each one of them dies seven in a row. And she marries each brother in line, so she's had seven husbands. And then she dies. When they all get to heaven, after this resurrection you talk about, which one is she going to be the wife of? Because she's got seven. Another great example today. Jesus says, ye do err, not knowing the scriptures nor the power of God. We err today because we don't know the scriptures. We make so many mistakes. I do because I don't know the scriptures. After I made a mistake and I'll run across it later and I went, oh, well. When I don't know the scriptures, I'm going to make a lot of mistakes in life. As Brother Gale talked about some of these, hopefully, I hope, I have a blessed assurance. I don't have an absolute no. I don't know what's in the Lamb's Book of Life, but I've been given a blessed assurance that I'm a child of God. And you're here today, and I think I've got the blessed assurance each one of you are a child of God. But we still err. We still say, don't do this. We still disobey the gospel. And many times we err because we don't know the scriptures. That helps us do what we should do. It helps us present our bodies a living sacrifice, as Brother Gale said. And then he answers the question, and I'll close with this one because the last one's pretty clear. He says, but since you brought it up, let me answer this. He said, have you not read? You haven't read your own scriptures. Because he says, have you not read back what the Lord said to Moses when the burning bush was going on? When the burning bush took place back in Exodus, I believe it's chapter 3, when Moses was at the burning bush and the Lord called him. And Moses says, I'm here. And he answered and he says, I am, right now, I am the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. Now, wait a minute. You know, if I'm Moses, I'm going, those guys are all dead. And if I'm a Sadducee, there's no resurrection. They believed in reincarnation. You're going to come back on this earth. They didn't believe in the resurrection. Now, if he's still the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, those people are alive. And their souls are alive in heaven. He's the God of the living. It's again, right here, he said, I'm not living. They've all been resurrected. God is not the God of the dead, but of the living. Not only did Jesus take the Sadducees right back to the law of Moses, he took them to the very first words that God spoke to Moses from the burning bush. He didn't have to go find a little scripture somewhere hidden and pull it out. Let's go back to the very first thing that God told Moses in front of that burning bush. I'm the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. I'm the God of the living, not the dead. Proving that the power of resurrection, establishing it right then by their very own doctrine and scripture. You know, you don't want to have a debate with Jesus. You're going to lose every time. He put the Sadducees to shame. And he went on and asked others. I'll leave that for another time. But we'll go ahead and finish here. But I wanted to tell you this. This Bible is as relevant today as ever. We got people today who don't believe in the resurrection. Read your Bible. We got people today that you get all upset at all the politics going on in Washington, and I do too, and I'm going, just read your Bible. There's more answers in here, and you go, this has been going on for 2,000 years. Devil's been playing games with us for 2,000 years like he did Saturday Street Fair. The nature of man has not changed. And that's the point I want to make. Don't let yourself get upset. Read your Bible and pray. If you don't like what's going on in the world, pray about it. If you don't like what's going on, pray about it. We got a man that can change it. A man bigger than a man. He can change it. The heart of the king is in the hand of the Lord. Whatever you don't like in this world, pray about it. You got problems in your life, pray about it. And some things are so severe, we ought to pray and fast about them. We serve a wonderful Lord who has mercy on us, as Brother Gale so aptly laid out. In this doctrine of election, you wouldn't. In my opinion, you wouldn't be here if you weren't one of the elect. I hadn't read the Lamb's Book of Life, but as I preached to you before, as Apostle Paul says, I have the blessed assurance that you're a child of God. We can put that in and say it. We serve a wonderful Lord who has chosen us for some reason that we didn't deserve it, but because of His mercy, He's given us a guidebook of life right here. He's already chosen us, Brother Gale said, before the foundation of the world. That's not an issue. Your living in this world is an issue. And he's given you a wonderful guidebook here. Not only to our life, but of the life going on around us. Of all the terrible politics going on in Washington and the world, Satan's working. But we got somebody on our side that's more powerful than Satan. I appreciate your kind attention, and may the Lord richly bless each of you.